KBOO's Mission and Vision Retreat on May the 30th from noon to 4 p.m. This retreat is an opportunity for members to support the development of a mission and vision statement for KBOO and to share your valuable knowledge about your community radio station. If you would like to attend the retreat on May the 30th, get in touch with Monica Beamer and RSVP by sending her an email at monica@kboo.org or calling 503-231-8032, extension 201. More details about the agenda for the retreat will be sent to you when you RSVP. We hope to see you on May the 30th, and thank you for being an active member of KBOO.
KBOO Portland, the time is now 4:59 p.m. Coming up next is the KBOO Evening News.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Los Angeles City Council approves a $15 an hour minimum wage.
Renewal of Section 215 of the Patriot Act is set to expire soon.
In France, you cannot throw away food anymore.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, May 22nd, 2015. I'm Linda Olson-Osterlund.
And I'm Liam Delta. On Tuesday, the Los Angeles City Council voted 14-1 to raise the minimum wage from $9 an hour to $15 an hour. The vote makes Los Angeles the largest city in the country to join the struggle for $15 an hour minimum wage. The increase is set to be phased in by 2020. Other than Los Angeles, San Francisco, Seattle, Chicago, Kansas City, Oakland, and Louisville have all passed legislation in the last 2 years to raise the minimum wage in those cities. Meanwhile, at McDonald's headquarters in Oak Brook, Illinois, 5,000 protesters gathered Wednesday to call for the fast food company to supersize my check. Growing public scrutiny over low wages and increasing economic inequality have put the company in the spotlight. McDonald's had recently raised the wages of their non-franchised corporation-owned restaurants by $1 an hour. Protesters demanded that McDonald's pay their employees $15 an hour.
The Oregon Senate Committee on Health Care voted 4-0 to advance a bill that could help make health care cheaper for low-income Oregonians. House Bill 2934 would allow the state to shift federal money from the Affordable Care Act towards health plans for people with low incomes. Supporters of the bill say it will help Oregon's most vulnerable communities at no cost to the state budget. Alberto Moreno from the Oregon Latino Health Coalition and Christina Narayan from the Asian Pacific American Network of Oregon testified at a public hearing on May 11. Here are parts of their testimonies.
By federal law, legal immigrants with Medicaid-level incomes must wait 5 years before they can enroll. This is referred to as a five-year bar. If you earn poverty wages, as in the case of farm workers, for example, whose annual salary is less than $10,000 a year, you already struggle to put food on your children's table, clothe them, and pay utilities. Paying costly monthly premiums and co-pays when you visit the doctor represents a considerable hardship for these families and drives health-seeking behaviors, which result in deferral of care and subsequent ER visits. A basic health plan option in Oregon can help this vital workforce get insurance, keep their coverage, and see a doctor when they need to stay healthy.
Asian and Pacific Islanders are the fastest growing population in the United States. It is a trend that is mirrored here in Oregon. Oregon's largest waves of Asian and Pacific Islanders have come to the United States as a direct result of military and economic interventions upon our native homes. As our families work to reunite with their loved ones, with their children, with their parents, with their grandparents, many of our families face hardships with regard to job loss and poverty. While all Oregonians are susceptible to these hurdles, Asian and Pacific Islander communities are disproportionately affected by these realities. We face additional barriers that a basic health plan may begin to address. APANO supports HB 2934 because an Oregon basic health program has the potential to eliminate disparities within two populations currently excluded from the Oregon health plan. And this group are from the Marshall Islands, Palau, and Micronesia. They have immigrated to the United States seeking education and health services. Again, their immigration is prompted by our ongoing military interests in their home islands. An Oregon basic health program may provide access with federal financial support for these communities who are currently ineligible for many important state services.
The bill passed the House last month and next will come to the floor of the Oregon Senate.
Hundreds of people gathered in front of City Hall in Olympia, Washington yesterday to protest the shooting of two unarmed black men by a white police officer Wednesday night. Bryson Chaplin and Andre Thompson allegedly stole beer from a local Safeway. The two stepbrothers ran away after being caught by a store clerk. Officer Ryan Donald confronted them 20 minutes later. Chaplin and Thompson were both shot. Donald says that while both men were unarmed, they were assaulting him with skateboards. They're in serious but stable medical condition.
U.S. President Barack Obama has signed into law a bill that would allow Congress to review and potentially reject any final nuclear agreement with Iran. The legislation overwhelmingly passed the House of Representatives and Senate earlier this month. The measure will allow for a 30-day review of any final nuclear deal with Iran. During the reviewing period, Obama would be able to waive those Iran sanctions, which were imposed by the executive branch. However, the president would have to leave in place sanctions that Congress had previously drafted. The bill would also force the Obama administration to certify on a regular basis that Iran is abiding by the terms of any nuclear deal. During a speech earlier on Friday, President Obama reassured American Jews that he still fully supports Israel.
The deal that we already reached with Iran has already halted or rolled back parts of Iran's nuclear program. Now we're seeking a comprehensive solution, a deal that endures beyond a decade, that addresses this challenge for the long term. In other words, a deal that makes the world and the region, including Israel, more secure.
And now something a little different from H2O Radio, a report on water in Iran.
In 2013, Iran's former agricultural minister said that the country's water crisis was more of a threat to its future than Israel, the U.S., or political infighting.
Last week, his warning became even more ominous. The former agricultural minister said that if the water issue was not addressed, Iran could become a place where no one could live, and the majority of the population, or about 50 million people, would have to leave the country.
Iran's official news agency reported last week that due to an increase in dam construction and failure to protect non-renewable waters, the country had lost 70% to 80% of its water.
The minister and others blame the crisis on mismanagement. The push for agricultural self-sufficiency led to overconsumption of water reserves.
To reverse the water crisis, the minister said water consumption needed to be cut in half, noting, however, that a number of political stakeholders dismiss sustainable development as a Western concept lacking utility in Iran.
One environmental expert told the news agency that for 3,000 years, Iranian people knew how to use water and be at equilibrium with Mother Nature, but that recent mismanagement had destroyed that heritage.
This Week in Water is a production of H2O Radio and is sponsored by Colorado WaterWise. Learn more at coloradowaterwise.org.
The California State Assembly has passed a ban on plastic microbeads. So far, the nation's toughest ban. Plastic microbeads are the gritty synthetic particles used in personal care products as exfoliant. The bill now heads to the state Senate, where a similar measure was defeated by a single vote last year. A Senate vote could take place this summer. Environmentalists have lobbied for the ban, saying the minuscule beads go through the treatment plants and are not biodegradable. They are usually smaller than 1 millimeter in diameter and generate an estimated 38 tons of plastic pollution in our rivers and the ocean. An estimated 471 million plastic microbeads are released into the San Francisco Bay every day, and there can be more than 300,000 microbeads in just one jar of facial cleanser. Fish and other sea creatures ingest these microbeads, as well as the toxins that are attached to them. The plastic then goes all the way up through the food chain and back to us.
Now we hear the latest in worker-related news from our friends at laborradio.org.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. McDonald's workers delivered 1.4 million petition signatures to the company's annual shareholders meeting in Oak Brook, Illinois, Thursday. The petitions supported $15 an hour and union rights. The workers rallied for the second day at the meeting, demanding better pay and union rights without employer retaliation. Former U.S. Labor Secretary Robert Reich was among many supporters of the worker demands that also included groups like MoveOn.org, Credo Action, and Daily Costs, who helped gather petition signatures. Workers wearing McDonald's uniforms delivered box loads of the petitions directly to shareholders. McDonald's, meanwhile, publicly complained that its brand is being damaged by, quote, union attacks. Teamsters Local 986 have hit the picket line in an unfair labor practice strike at the SLS Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas. 50 valet drivers there trying to organize say they've been hit with firings and other illegal employer retaliation. From the picket line, Chris Griswold, Secretary Treasurer of Teamsters 986, described what triggered the strike.
This employer continually threatens these people with outsourcing their job, with meetings that they're telling them that they're going to lose their jobs if they choose to form a union. The employees together had a petition signed by the majority of the employees asking the employer to stay neutral, stay out of the fight, let us decide amongst ourselves. And the employer's response was to fire the three leaders of the petition.
Griswold says the workers want a union because they know they'll be much better off when they're organized.
They want what every union member has. They want job security. They want to go to work and know that they're not an at-will employee. They want health and welfare benefits that, you know, are provided by the employer that's affordable for their families so they can have a good living. They want rules that aren't changed every day, that they walk in and it's a whole new game. They want retirement plans, pension plans, good Teamster pension plans.
The U.S. Senate Thursday voted 62-38, invoking cloture to fast-track the TPP trade agreement. Teamsters President Jim Hoffa said the Senate's action hurts workers. Hoffa says the war on TPP fast-track is far from over. Labor will continue the battle against it in the House, where Hoffa says opposition to TPP fast-track is strong.
What's outrageous?
We can't survive on 725. We can't survive on 725.
Workers Independent News has launched a campaign on Indiegogo to increase our coverage of the low-wage worker movement and the fight for 15. It's called Raise the Wage. For more information, go to Indiegogo.com, click on Campaigns, and then enter Raise the Wage in the search field.
15 at a union!
15 at a union!
This newscast made possible in part by the United Steelworkers and by the National Association of Letter Carriers. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin at 5:30, followed by Bread and Roses at 6, a conversation with two young black women about their college experience and their plans post-graduation, and how their families' understanding of college life affected their experience. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tonight's lows are 50 to 55. Saturday is cloudy with a slight chance of light rain, highs 60 to 65. Sunday will be slightly warmer and partly sunny. Today in history, in 1849, Abraham Lincoln received patent number 6469 for his floating dry dock. In 1972, Richard Nixon arrived in Moscow, becoming the first U.S. president to visit the Soviet Union. And the quote of the day is Maya Angelou, who says, "It is impossible to struggle for civil rights, equal rights for blacks, without including whites, because equal rights, fair play, justice, and all, like the air, we all have it or none of us have it. That's the truth of it."
It's 5:14. Time for daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
I have some big political news, folks. Hillary Clinton is a populist. No, seriously. She says she is. Well, she hasn't actually used the P word to describe her 2016 political persona, but the managers of the greater Clintonista political perpetual motion machine are casting her as the very embodiment of pure populism, even asserting that Hillary was populist before populism was cool. Indeed, they're even claiming that she is the original Elizabeth Warren, today's hell-raising senatorial champion of the poor and the middle class. If that assertion strikes you as a not-so-subtle put-down of Senator Warren, it is. To back up Clinton's claim of populist superiority, her partisans have issued a 16-page document itemizing 40 instances in which Hillary took populist positions on issues before Elizabeth did. And if that's still too subtle for you to get the message that Clinton is to be considered populism's numero uno, one of her close confidants has tried to kneecap Warren, bluntly dismissing her as a, quote, footnote. How tacky. But populism is, as populism does, it's not a brand name to throw on like a designer scarf, but real pointed policies and actions that democratize money and power in our society. Yet Clinton, a former member of Walmart's board of directors, hasn't even had the guts to say no to the latest anti-worker plutocratic trade scam called the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Her milquetoast response to this audacious assault on our people's sovereignty by global moneyed elites is a vague statement that the corporate deal should protect American workers. On the other hand, rather than playing political patty cake with this raw power grab, Senator Warren is going after it hammer and tong, demanding that Congress kill it outright. This is Jim Hightower saying, that's the real populism.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org.
The government of France has banned supermarkets from throwing away food that doesn't get sold. Grocery stores will now be required to give extra food to charity or face penalties that include fines and short prison sentences. French journalists have been shedding light on how low-income families dig through garbage cans to find food that has just expired. Some stores began locking away their discarded food in order to prevent people from obtaining it. The National Assembly passed the law unanimously. A member of the center-right party said, quote, "There's an absolute urgency. Charities are desperate for food. The most moving part of this law is that it opens us up to those who are suffering," end quote.
Just hours ahead of a nationwide vigil held at dusk to sunset Section 215 of the Patriot Act, the Justice Department issued a report which found that the FBI is in the habit of using surveillance authority inappropriately. Free Press was among the coalition of groups that organized last night's demonstration, which was held in 50 cities across the country. KBOO's Robin Ryan spoke with their strategy director, Tim Carr, about the controversial provision in the Patriot Act scheduled to expire on June 1st unless Congress acts to renew it.
A coalition of groups that have been fighting, advocating for reform of surveillance laws. It's groups that include Free Press, Fight for the Future, and Demand Progress have been calling for Section 215 of the Patriot Act. It comes up for reauthorization on June 1st to sunset. That is, that Congress would not reauthorize this authority and they would let it expire. The Patriot Act, as most people might remember, was passed within months of the September 11th, 2001 terrorist attacks in the United States. And a lot of people, including myself, think that it went too far in giving authority to the National Security Administration, giving authority to the Central Intelligence Agency and other intelligence agencies to surveil communications of all Americans. And now, some 14 years later, we need to reconsider that and allow the Patriot Act to expire and have a thorough review of what the NSA is doing to make sure that the type of surveillance that we're learning about more and more, certainly since 2013 when Edward Snowden went public and exposed a lot of these practices, the things that we're learning indicate that the government authority has gone too far, and we need to restrike a balance between national security concerns and concerns for civil liberties. At the moment, the national security concerns are out of whack, and we're concerned that our First Amendment rights, our Fourth Amendment rights, are under threat.
Wondering about whether Congress is feeling more pressure from the contractors or from the cabinet?
Well, surveillance is a multi-billion dollar industry. So the notion that there is an elevated threat that the United States is very likely going to be attacked, that there are people out there who are trying to figure out ways to compromise our national security, may or may not be accurate. It certainly is helpful to the surveillance industrial complex, if you want to call it that, that makes billions and billions of dollars selling the kind of security technology that agencies like the NSA and the CIA and the FBI need in order to keep tabs on all communications. Now, the approach that they've taken, and which is one that we're concerned about, is this idea that in order to find a threat out there, you have to sift through mountains and mountains of communications. It's this kind of needle in the haystack approach, which has been the guiding approach for the security apparatus in the United States. Unfortunately, in order for them to get that haystack of data, they've asked FISA courts, they've asked Congress to give them the authority to basically surveil every bit of communication, everything that we do, whether it's calling a relative overseas on the telephone, whether it's posting something on Facebook or Twitter, has the potential to be surveilled by these agencies given the authority that they now claim under the Patriot Act and under other pieces of legislation like the FISA Amendments Act. So we're working right now to try to reform that legislation to make sure that it strikes that balance between national security concerns, which are very real in many respects, but also making sure that our basic civil liberties are protected.
What's the next step? Do you guys have a really full dance card in terms of going to visit members of Congress?
Well, we still don't know as of right now whether Section 215 of the Patriot Act is going to be reauthorized. We're still fighting to make sure that that doesn't happen. We have called for a congressional investigation. Much like what happened in 1975, there was a church committee after the end of the Vietnam War that it did a thorough, very probing investigation of security at that time, at the end of the Vietnam War, and found that the CIA and other intelligence agencies had overstepped their bounds. We think that Congress should undertake a similar investigation today to put all of this information on the table and see whether or not the surveillance practices of the NSA and other intelligence agencies are in line with our constitutional rights under the First and Fourth Amendment. We asked people to meet up outside the offices of their senators at sunset to have a candlelight vigil. Some people didn't bring candles but brought their cell phones and used those as sort of a symbolic candle to send a message to members of Congress, in particular the Senate, that there are a lot of people out here who do not want this authority to be renewed. And we had fairly large crowds coming out in cities like San Francisco, Washington, D.C., New York, and Boston, and several other smaller cities across the country.
I've been talking with Timothy Carr. He is the Senior Strategy Director at Free Press. For more information, you can visit their website at freepress.net. I'm Robin Ryan, and you're listening to KBOO News.
A judge has ruled that the Senate report on the CIA's torture methods will not be made public, will not be made available to the public. The 7,000-page report details the interrogation practices and techniques by the CIA in the wake of 9/11. The executive summary was released in December and describes waterboarding, rectal feeding, sleep deprivation, and general mismanagement by the CIA. U.S. District Judge James Boasberg wrote that the rest of the report will remain classified because Congress has a constitutional right to keep its records secret.
The fate of a former Guantanamo prisoner who died this month showed that the effects of maltreatment and torture continue to haunt detainees even after release. Asim Tabit Abdullah Al-Kalaki was held at Guantanamo for 11 years. He died on May 7th of kidney failure. Another ex-prisoner, Jihad Diab, has kept in touch with Al-Kalaki even though the two men were released to different countries. Diab still suffers from the effects of a hunger strike and forced feeding. He said that Al-Kalaki's death was a result of inadequate medical care during his many years of imprisonment, and that Al-Kalaki repeatedly requested medical attention but was denied it by doctors and guards. Dr. Stephen Zanakis, an anti-torture advocate of Physicians for Human Rights, said limited medical supplies and a constantly rotating medical staff contribute to insufficient treatment for Guantanamo prisoners. He also said that guards frequently interfere, allowing treatment for prisoners they consider well-behaved, but preventing it for those they dislike. Al-Kalaki was one of the first people sent to Guantanamo in 2002. He was released just 6 months ago. He was never charged with a crime.
A judge has ruled that the Senate... Let me redo that. I think I was going to read you the one I just had. Now it's the latest news and developments from the occupied territories in Palestine from the International Middle East Media Center in Bethlehem.
Welcome to This Week in Palestine, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for May 16th to the 22nd, 2015. This week, the Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas reiterated his commitment to the two-state solution. Meanwhile, Israeli attacks targeting Palestinian communities left one civilian killed. These stories and more coming up. Stay tuned. Let's begin our weekly report as usual with the nonviolent activities organized in the West Bank. One youth was injured and scores were treated for the effects of tear gas inhalation when Israeli troops attacked nonviolent protests organized in West Bank villages on Friday. I'm EMC's Majd Bajali with the details.
In the village of Kufr Kadum in northern West Bank, many residents were treated for the effects of tear gas inhalation as Israeli troops attacked the weekly protest there. Troops later stormed the village and fired tear gas into residents' homes. Meanwhile, in the villages of Bilayn and Na'lin in central West Bank, Israeli soldiers attacked protesters as soon as they reached the gate in the wall that separates local farmers from their lands. Many protesters suffered effects of tear gas inhalation and were treated by field medics at both locations. In Bilayn, soldiers arrested one resident during the protest. At the nearby Nabi Saleh village, one youth was injured after troops attacked protesters at the village entrance. Israeli soldiers fired several rounds of rubber-coated steel bullets and tear gas at protesters and nearby homes. Many residents suffered effects of tear gas inhalation as a result. Also on Friday, at the village of Al-Masara, near the southern West Bank city of Bethlehem, soldiers attacked villagers and their international supporters as soon as they reached the village entrance and forced them back. No injuries were reported. For IMEMC News, this is Majd Bajali.
Five. In the Gaza Strip this week, Israeli Navy ships attacked on Friday morning several Palestinian fishing boats in the Sudania area northwest of Gaza City, causing significant property damage. On Wednesday, Israeli military ships opened fire on Palestinian fishing boats in the Al-Waha and As-Sudania areas in Gaza, causing excessive property damage but no injuries. For IMEMC News, this is Iman Abdrabbo Banoura.
That's all for today from This Week in Palestine. This was the weekly report for May 16th to the 22nd, 2015 from the occupied Palestinian territories. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. This week's report has been brought to you by Ghassan Banoura and me, Camila Vincent. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight is Alan Monticello, Robin Ryan, and Jim Thompson. Our engineer is Ian Gadberry. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews or look for us on Twitter at KBOO News. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River 91.9 FM. I'm Linda Olson Osterlund.
And I'm Liam Delta. Coming up Monday morning on KBOO at 7, Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8 on More Talk Radio, my cohort Linda Olson Osterlund talks war and soldiers on Memorial Day and discusses the question, American soldiers, heroes or imperial stormtroopers? At 9 on the Old Mole Variety Hour, Bill Resnick talks with activist teacher Jesse Hagopian of Seattle about developments in labor organizing and the upcoming Labor Notes Troublemakers School. At 10, Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15 on Locus Focus, Barbara Bernstein talks with Dan Ceres, conservation director for Columbia Riverkeeper, about proposals to build oil, coal, and liquid natural gas terminals across the Northwest and the opposition these proposals face from broad segments of the community. At 11, Grace Eagle Reed hosts Disability Awareness, a monthly show